Hello, I'm Kate Chabot. Welcome to an extra edition of the SITREP podcast. From bullets to guided missiles, tiny drones to aircraft carriers, British servicemen and women rely on having the right kit to do their jobs and potentially save their lives at the front line. But the process of buying that equipment has a long history of big failings. Ajax armoured vehicles not only years late and billions over budget, they ended up injuring troops in testing. Upgraded Warrior armoured vehicles and Nimrod spy planes were cancelled altogether because they couldn't deliver. The system to buy them has been branded broken by MPs. But it's nothing new. Successive governments have struggled and promised fixes for decades. The latest shake-up of defence acquisition is just coming into effect. The promise is it will cut competition between the three services for funding, place new reality checks on plans, and get equipment into service quicker by not waiting for perfection. Can this one deliver for the forces? The Defence Procurement Minister, James Cartledge, has been explaining how it should work and why he's optimistic. James Cartledge, great to meet you. Thank you very much for your time. You told MPs there are five key features to this defence acquisition reform. Can you briefly outline those five key changes, what they are, and then we can look at each of them in detail?
Thank you very much, Kate. So the first one is being more joined up. It's called an integrated procurement model for a reason. As I'm sure all our armed forces personnel know, we have an integrated operating concept, the way we want to fight as an armed forces, which is because the modern battle space requires that. It needs to have the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, Strategic Command all joined up, sharing, able to share data and so on. And so I think the procurement system should match that. So, for example, with our new munitions strategy, rather than simply looking in, these are the three armed forces, these are the three services, this is what they need, we are taking a top-level picture. What is the threat we face? What do we need in the integrated battle space of today? So the first one is being more joined up. The second one is having checks and balances. And really, for me, as procurement minister, that is what I call a second opinion, so that when the military come forward with their requirements, we are properly kicking the tires on it to make sure it's the right thing to do. And that means, for example, bringing in more of the voices, the brilliant views of people like our DSTL scientists, people who work on exports, who are in DNS, using that expertise to give a really strong second opinion to ministers to say whether we should be procuring this recommendation from the armed forces. The third one is exportability. If we can export more, it means our industrial supply chains are more resilient, so that when we need munitions, the supply chain hasn't turned off, to put it bluntly. So we'll be encouraging, considering exportability in our new equipment right from the outset. The fourth one is empowering industrial innovation, because industry is so important to this. We know if we want to have the best kit, we want to be able to support our brilliant British defence industry, so bringing them in much earlier on, understanding our requirements. And finally, it's about what we call spiral development. And I think this is perhaps the most important, because I think anyone listening who's familiar with the history of procurement in the UK military, there is this idea that we've been too exquisite. We've gone for platforms and capabilities where the requirements are so complex that they get delayed and bogged down, etc. Whereas spiral is the idea that you go for, rather than 100%, you go for 60 or 80%, and then once it's in service as soon as possible, you then spirally develop it, particularly against the changing and evolving threat.
Mm. I'll ask you a few more questions on those various points in a moment. The new Integration Design Authority is just starting work, isn't it? How will it change procurement? What kind of impact will it have? What will it do exactly?
That's a really good question. So one thing we want to do is more joined up, and we want checks and balances. The Integrated Design Authority, which sits in Strategic Command, will have, if you like, a watchdog position overseeing that. So that if, for example, a procurement comes forward for a new platform, but they feel it isn't integrated with the rest of defence, they will be able to say, hold on a minute, you need to go back and reconsider that.
So does that actually mean that ultimately the single services don't get to decide what equipment they get as it's decided by Strategic Command?
Well, ultimately, the way the system works now is I am ultimately responsible to Parliament, as the government is accountable. So what we want to ensure is that we procure the best equipment for our people. Every person out there listening, within the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, they want to know that the equipment we procure is the best, and they want to know that it will enable them to fight most effectively. And for that, you need an integrated force. So I think it's really important to have this ability to, if you like, have oversight of what we're doing, make sure we're procuring the right things. That's not taking away the ability of the single services to still procure individually, but it's giving that oversight to ensure that we make the right decision.
And that input from your own scientists that you mentioned about the viability of technology, is that effectively a reality check?
I think it's recognising that war is changing so fast because technology is changing so quickly. We see in Ukraine the classic example of the way drones are being used, that their use is changing on a daily basis. And what I've witnessed with DSTL is when they work in close partnership with the military, they are able to give them competitive edge through very clever, often very sensitive scientific support, the use of technology, etc. That's where we want to have our leading edge. If our military is to be capable and effective and above all competitive with our adversaries, it will be that cutting edge in new technology that will be really important. So having the input of scientists at the beginning, I think, will be crucial.
So what things have we been trying to procure that wouldn't have passed that test, that have been hopelessly unrealistic?
So, I mean, look, to be frank, when I got the job as Defence Procurement Minister, I always talk about the fact that on the day that I got it, there was a vote in Parliament and I was walking through the lobby and my colleague said to me, "Congratulations, James, and by the way, you've got Ajax." So, look, I think Ajax is a fantastic platform. Yeah. It's very capable. It's now back. It's in regular field training with Household Cavalry. But, of course, its procurement, you know, coming to be manufactured was dogged by issues. It took a long time. It came to symbolise what was wrong with procurement. I think, to give just one example, so I said we need to consider export more in procurement. What that gives you is not just saying when you look at a new capability, assess the international demand, because if it's got international demand, we know British industry will be more vibrant. They won't be dependent just on UK sales. And I think with something like Ajax, if you had that discipline, you'd be less likely to give it all these very complex UK requirements because you know you've got to sell it internationally as well.
Okay, because that was going to be my next question, is how this new system would have changed the way Ajax was procured.
Yeah, which is, by the way, is the same question everyone always asks. I was asked it in the Commons when I made my statements. It's a very, very good question. And I always say the same thing. Obviously, we can't say for definite about the past. Mm. What we can say is if you have these checks and balances, these kicking of the tyres on programmes, you're less likely to make those mistakes. There's no guarantee, and it has to be said, defence procurement is complex. Mm-hmm. You know, we have problems with delays because of international supply chains. That's beyond our control. What we can control is to have an effective, integrated way of procuring where we maximise these other voices looking at the proposal, giving their view, and then coming to a joined-up policy position. And once you've got that solid, then sprinting to the line and getting into line quicker.
You say you want to drive industrial innovation by consulting earlier on secret terms. There are mixed messages here, aren't there? Is there a danger your pursuit of cutting-edge technology will clash with the need for greater realism?
So I think that's a good question. We already hold sessions with industry at secret. That means we can share with them our requirements much earlier. Obviously, those representatives will have had to be security cleared and so on. This is all conducted very sensitively, but we've had brilliant feedback from industry. Because if I give you an example why that matters so much, my most positive experience as Minister for Defence Procurement is when I visited an SME that was manufacturing a drone that was being used in Ukraine, absolutely cutting edge. They were getting feedback from the front line, and within days they were what we call spirally upgrading that system so it could still compete against the Russian threat. That is about a strong relationship between industry and the data we're getting as a Ministry of Defence. If we do that right, we're much more likely to get technological solutions that suit our requirements.
So on spiral development then, which you explained earlier, can you just tell me what kind of an impact that is actually going to have on improving the delivery of capability to men and women of the forces?
Well, of course, time is crucial. We want to procure equipment much more quickly. Actually, we've done brilliantly procuring for Ukraine because there's been that sense of urgency because it really is a live military theatre, obviously. But with spiral, this is about cultural change. This is about the fact that if we want these changes to have an impact, culture in defence has to change. And if the assumption is, instead of we're going to get this exquisite item which gets full operating capability in many years and it's highly technical, we're going to go for what we call the minimum deployable product yeah. into the front line as soon as possible, i.e. being usable once the balloon goes up, something that could be used, dare I say, in war. If you get it to that stage, it may not be perfect, but you're then spirally upgrading it. Because actually, that's how technology works. This is not a new concept if you run a software business, and much of our competitive edge in the future will come from software.
When you talk about the minimal deployable capability of a product, that's a move from model of initial and then full operating capability. Is there a danger then that people might get equipment that isn't fully ready for the job?
Well, it's.
How do you prevent that from happening?
If you think about it, that is a psychological change, because what you're saying is you're immediately making the emphasis on let's get this into use as soon as possible, because essentially we are, unfortunately, potentially closer to a wartime situation. Now, if we as the UK were formally in conflict, as all our personnel will remember, you have urgent operational requirements, you have things that you do to ensure that were you going out to Afghanistan or Iraq, etc., your equipment is more battle ready than it would be in a normal peacetime situation. So how do you use that sort of sense of urgency where we are as a country now? And I think it's by, as I say, trying to get this cultural change and making people realise that technology is on our side, it is working faster, it's normal for software companies to upgrade their programs quickly. If we can get that culture into our DNA in defence, we will have better procurement, but more importantly, our armed forces will be more capable and more competitive.
You also put an emphasis on exportability for new acquisitions. Does that not risk equipping our armed forces based not on what they think they need, but what on other countries want?
Well, this is common. I mean, probably two of the best examples, France and Israel. These are nations which have always strongly considered export when they procure. And the reason for that is, go back to the outbreak of the war in Ukraine, NLAW was a remarkably effective capability which we had supplied to the Ukrainians and helped them to keep themselves in the fight, stopping that initial column that was coming into Kyiv, along with other weapons and capabilities, obviously. Of course, we then got the request, can we obtain more of these items? And they weren't being manufactured anymore. So what export gives you, it gives you industrial resilience, because your demand is stronger, because the UK demand isn't enough for industry on its own. But also, it means if we can get enough export and UK demand and Ukraine and put all that together, you can get the ideal scenario for industry, which is what we call always on. The machine is chugging along so that if you need to ramp up production, you can. Recent years, that's been a real problem. Production went down so much because we thought we had peace. We now know we're in a different era.
Ultimately, this is about giving Britain's servicemen and women the equipment that they need to do their jobs. What commitment do you give to them about delivering that equipment with this new system?
Well, this is what motivates me and my colleagues here in Defence. It's what motivates people at DNS, at Defence Digital. We know we have a huge responsibility. There are many legion stories of our armed forces going back over the years when they found themselves in theatre with kit that let them down. And that's the sort of thing that keeps me awake at night. But I have huge faith in British industry to deliver, as long as we have a close partnership. And as long as we're prepared to be open and transparent. I think in the past, there's been this tendency in defence to just make presumptions about, well, we've had the Mark III or the Mark II of whatever platform, we now need the Mark IV and the Mark V, without really thinking about, is this the right technological option?
You said it's the kind of thing that keeps you awake at night, worrying about servicemen and women not having the equipment they need. When will this new system really start making a difference to those men and women doing their work, risking their lives at the sharp end?
So I'm confident that we'll be announcing some new procurements quite soon that will exemplify some of the principles I've outlined.
Care to share?
Obviously, being the Ministry of Defence, some of these are sensitive. Some of them will be announced shortly. And when they do, I'm sure there'll be a lot of interest from our armed forces personnel. But my message to them is we want to deliver the best. It's not straightforward. It's highly complex. And there will still be, no matter what happens, those long programs like nuclear submarines, etc., which take a long time and are highly complex. But we know that technological change is possible because it's happening in Ukraine in front of our eyes. Mm. We've actually empowered some of that. Let's learn those lessons so that we improve our own armed forces and our own procurement system.
Having said that, we know that getting new military equipment is generally a long-term job, but your boss, the Defence Secretary, says we are in a pre-war era. What are we doing to speed up acquisition of things we might need very urgently? Simple things like artillery shells, for example.
Well, that is an excellent question, because I think, as sort of building on the point I just made, if you look at some of the public discussion, people will say, well, we need to buy more ships. And that's fine. And They have to understand, frigates, no matter how hard you try, no matter how good the procurement system, will take a significant amount of time to build. Whereas actually, we have our existing fleet. We have the ships that will be coming out of our amazing shipbuilding yards in Scotland in the next few years, our Type 26, Type 31, etc. What can we do to enhance both the lethality and survivability of our existing platforms and capabilities, the ones we would fight with today, and the stuff that will be coming out imminently, rather than 9 or 10 years' time? That's where I think we need to focus. And as I said, the really good news to them is that's where technology is. Technology wants to do things quickly. If you take, I'll give you one key example, if I may, uncrewed systems. I think drones are transformative, and they can give us mass, i.e. increase the mass of our forces, and through their technological ability also support through ISR and other things how our armed forces work.
The Commons Defence Committee says we're not ready for war. So does James Heapy, who was Armed Forces Minister until last month. As Procurement Minister, what are the most urgent tasks to get us ready for that possibility?
So first of all, just to reassure everyone, I think we are ready. What James Heapy, who was a brilliant Armed Forces Minister, was actually talking about was national planning. So if you like, cross-government planning in the event of like a full-scale threat to the homeland. And that's a big deal. But if you look at the reality, first of all, we have a continuous sea deterrent. It's been in the sea every day since 1969, giving us the ultimate defence. We committed 20,000 personnel. Many people watching this, I hope, will be on Steadfast Defender or will have been on it recently. That is the biggest contribution to that NATO exercise. It's a massive exercise. It shows the readiness of NATO, which we are a key part of. So I think we are ready. Of course, the other part of it, as you say, procurement, you look at what we're procuring in the land domain, Challenger 3, Ajax, Boxer, these are all coming through now. Our Type 26 frigates, our Type 31s, and of course, as I said, the enhancements to our existing equipment, and then there's GCAP, there's the upgrades to Typhoon, F-35s. I think we have a formidable force, actually, but I'm very conscious of the fact that it constantly needs that support and maintenance and constant improvements to procurement.
You talk a very positive, optimistic, good game.
I am.
What's the biggest challenge?
Well, the biggest challenge is cultural change, actually. I can announce all the strategies I want, and we've published today, this week, our new integrated procurement model, and I think you will see some very practical examples of how it actually takes effect. But it'll only really work if the culture of defence changes too. And I think some of that you're starting to see, because there's no choice. We have to change procurement because of the military threat we face and because our potential adversaries are themselves going into technology so aggressively, ramping up their industrial production. We've got to match them. In fact, we've got to exceed them.
It also costs money. The plan is to increase defence spending to 2.5% of GDP when finances allow. Could that end up being too late?
Well, obviously, that's ultimately a decision for the Prime Minister and the Chancellor when that moment is. I feel very positive with inflation falling that the economic situation is improving. But as I say, that's a decision for them. So my job as Defence Procurement Minister, I'm the person who ensures that the money we do have is spent better, because I think that's a big part of it. I think even within the armed forces, whilst they want to see more spending, as we all do in defence, they know that we can spend what we do already spend in a better way, and that's about procurement reform.
But you were a Treasury Minister before coming to the MOD.
Yep.
Does the Treasury get it in terms of the urgency of some of the needs in defence?
Totally. The Treasury gets it, but it also knows it has to find the money. And I think this is a really key point. There's a lot of people calling for more spending, but they're not necessarily saying where the money would come from. Someone in government has to make that decision, and that's the Treasury. But I think we have a close relationship with them. I've got that background as a Treasury Minister. I see it from their point of view. I think that the Chancellor is very pro stronger defence. The Prime Minister, when he was Chancellor, put in place the biggest increase in defence spending since the Cold War. So as a Conservative government team, we are very supportive of more spending on defence, but the economic circumstances do have to support that.
Government after government has struggled with defence procurement. What do you say to people who fear that this is just another review that won't work?
First of all, it's already having an impact, just to be absolutely clear. What we've done procuring for Ukraine because of the work at DNS under Andy Starr has been absolutely brilliant. We've got equipment out there into a live military theatre very quickly, and it's been highly effective. I also think that, to a certain extent, we don't have a choice this time. The reason why I think this will have impact is because of the military situation. The people who lead our armed forces and all of their personnel know that we have to be able to compete with our adversaries, and we have to stay at the cutting edge of technological change. The good news is we've got those companies in our country. We've got that technology. If we can have a close relationship with them, if we can have transparency and those checks and balances I was talking about so that we really challenge requirements early on, I think we can have better procurement.
A phrase we've heard a lot over the years is this conspiracy of optimism. If you forgive me, you do sound pretty optimistic to me in buying defence equipment, particularly about the costs as well. How does your new model address that?
So, by the way, I am optimistic because when I look at what the UK is doing, it's way beyond its actual, it punches way above its weight. You know, a nuclear deterrent committed to Europe, 20,000 personnel with Steadfast Defender. So I am very optimistic. I have great faith in our personnel. They themselves haven't always had great faith in procurement, so I get that. What I'm trying to say to them is, I think I'm being as open as I can, as candid as I can, about the mistakes we've had in the past and learning from them. I am not promising it will all now be perfect, obviously, but I think those core principles are really important. Let's just take the first one, being more joined up. That's pretty significant. We have a strong culture in the UK Armed Forces of three single services, the Army, the Air Force and the Navy. And long may that remain, because it's vital to recruitment and morale and everything. But in the modern battle space, you have to have an integrated force. And so I think there is a realisation that that must come with it, integrated procurement.
When you mentioned the attitude of service personnel, can you understand those that might actually, or are they justified in feeling let down by procurement and being fed up in what they've had to endure with this culture of huge delays and having to wait for what they really need when they're doing their job?
Yeah, and look, the most common reaction I get is, oh, we've heard this all before.
Really?
People are cynical. They're concerned that this is just another press release, etc. Mm. But what's happening in Ukraine isn't made up. We really did get them the equipment they needed really urgently. We were the country that cohered our international partners to ensure they're now getting significant equipment from Germany, from Denmark, the Czech Republic, and everyone else. We're all pulling together. So these things can be delivered, and I think procurement reform can be, as long as people like me are candid about the challenge, and then coming up with solutions that actually deliver change. And we will need, as I say, the crucial bit of it has got to become cultural within MOD. So, for example, getting the mindset away from, well, we're just going to have another platform that's going to take this many years, that's our priority, instead focusing on what do we need in the immediate here and now to enhance the lethality and capability and survivability of our armed forces.
I wish you luck. Thank you very much for
your
time.
Thank you.
News, discussions, and analysis. This is SITREP.